Good morning. We're here to interview Dr. Larry Waits and his wife. My name is Donald Smith from the College of Veterinary Medicine at Cornell University. And it's Tuesday morning, October the 9th, 2007. Dr. Waits, it's a real pleasure, honor to meet you and your wife.
It's a pleasure to meet you, sir.
Thank you. And I would be delighted if you would share with us some of the things that brought you to veterinary medicine, to Cornell, and what it was like to be there in 1927 when you started?
Yes. When I was a boy, I was a Boy Scout and was interested in camping and that sort of thing. And I enrolled in the College of Forestry in Syracuse. But in my last year or two in high school, I went horseback riding with a veterinarian named Dr. Tom Corwin, who kept several horses boarding at a stable where I worked after school and weekends, exercising horses and riding with people to show them the trails. And one day after we were riding, he asked me if I'd like to go on a call with him. So I went on a few calls with him that afternoon after we treated me to a great lunch, and that had an effect on me too. And we went to a stable where they kept milk horses. He had something like 18 or 20 Sheffield Farms and Borden stables that took care of horses for the milk drivers. And I went with him on calls, and I just was fascinated with it. And just in that one day, I got hooked on becoming a veterinarian. And he was, at the time, he had a small animal hospital in its infancy. So he did some small animal hospital work from his home and did the large animal work all over Queens and Brooklyn and Nassau County. I worked for him my senior year in high school, and then several summers after I enrolled in the veterinary college. But after I graduated, I worked for four or five other veterinarians because I wasn't old enough to get my license when I graduated. I was 16 when I went to college, and I was 20 when I got out, and I didn't find out until my senior year when I was taking one of the exams. The professor said, you know, you have to be 21 to take the state boards. And I was crushed because I wasn't 21 until July, so I couldn't take the state boards with my class. I took the state boards in New York City in January 1932, and then I think the following week I took the New Jersey state boards too. I didn't do any others because I had no plans to go. I wanted to practice on Long Island. So because I didn't have my license immediately, I worked for four or five different veterinarians, which was a wonderful experience because I got a lot of practical things that I wouldn't have gotten any other way than struggling along on my own. So then in 1932, after I finished with the state boards, I started up a practice in Hempstead, which I thought was the center of the hub in Nassau County. And you could go in many directions to make calls, large animal calls I was thinking of. And I started off there in the Depression when men were selling apples on the street. And right from the beginning, I made a good living. And I was so fortunate to be a veterinarian and have work that was needed, particularly in that area, because there was a shortage of large animal veterinarians. So it ended up, I took care of about 18 commercial dairies and many stables of horses and many private horses on estates and in riding academies and that sort of thing, and enjoyed it very much. But I'd always had a little asthma, and the more I did large animal work and got exposed to hay and horses, it got worse. So while I loved the work, I spent many a night sleepless, wheezing away the night, and then would work the next day. But so after talking to many doctors about it, and the only solution they had was to stay away from the large animals, I finally sold out my lodge animal practice to Dr. Eugene Dillman, who took it over, did a good job of it. And not knowing anything else to do, I bought a partnership in a small animal hospital in Rockville Center with Dr. Saul Cedar. And I worked there for 10 years, but I didn't really like it because it was like a factory. And the only thing I really liked about it was the surgery, and I did most of the surgery. He liked doing the office calls, and I did some office calls, of course, but whenever I could, I did the surgery and took care of the animals. And finally, after 10 years, I just couldn't stand the rat race there anymore. It was a real factory, and the more I did, the more there was to be done. So I finally gave it up, and I always wanted to move to Southold. As a boy, for 5 summers, I had a riding school in Southold, and that's the way I earned money to go to Cornell with this riding stable. And so I always loved Southold, and I came back there again. And I built this hospital in Southold and practiced there for 10 years. But then finally had to give that up too and sold the practice to Dr. Zittick. As the area changed and became mostly an area of retired people with second homes out here, that the large animal work actually disappeared about the same time I did. Since then, I've had a wonderful life. I had a wonderful retired. I started a new hobby of painting pictures and was quite successful at that. Worked regularly with other people painting and started a little organization called the Tuesday Morning Group, and we painted together for 20 years. I also got interested in sailing. My wife taught me to sail a boat. I'd never had a chance before I married Ann. And so after I retired, I really went into sailing a great deal. And I bought a wonderful boat from the Bahama Islands called the Frigate Birds, which I had for 22 years, a 30-foot sailboat that you could have gone around the world in. The whole family really enjoyed that, and we did a little racing and a lot of cruising. We cruised up to Maine 5 times. But this veterinarian that I worked for, the first one, he'd been a large animal practitioner, and then he developed this little small animal hospital in his home. And the small animal was in its infancy, really. They had to kind of learn as they went along and work it out, and knew a lot of practical things which you never would learn at college, you know. Not to discount the knowledge, but it's a wonderful thing to get practical experience. They certainly had to do it themselves in those days.
Tell me about your interest in surgery. For example, how did you learn the surgical techniques that you found so interesting?
Well, I watched different veterinarians do it. I watched Dr. Corwin, who I worked for that first year, and watched everything he did. And then I went to watch other ones that I heard about that did various operations. And the first cesarean I ever saw was this Dr. Cock in the city. And he had developed the technique down, and I think he only used morphine and local anesthetic. He didn't use anything else, and I did most of them that way before we had barbiturate and Nembutal and things like that. We had to do a lot of things with a minimum of anesthetic.
You left high school and you went to Ithaca. Did you go by train, or how did you get?
I went to Ithaca on the train. And my father took me to New York City from Jamaica, and one of my high school boyfriends went along, and I went on the New York Central to Ithaca, and I got off in Ithaca with Babe in arms, and a great horde descended selling your magazines and all sorts of things, all sorts of memberships and all. And a young man came up to me, and he introduced himself to me. He was a pre-med student. He took the trouble to come to the train and took me up the hill and helped me to find a room on 306 Eddy Street for $5 a month. I stayed there for 3 years with a fine family called the Mitchells. And then the last year, I moved to the Alpha Psi fraternity and roomed with Paul Marvin, who was one of my friends and classmates. He was a son of a dairy farmer from upstate, and his other brother, John, had studied veterinary medicine a year or two ahead. And his father didn't want him to become a veterinarian. He wanted him to help run the dairy farm, but he was hooked like I was. And so he had to work his way. And he worked every night as a short order cook in some little restaurant up near the campus. And then he would come home at 11 o'clock and look through the studies that I'd been puzzling over all evening. And he'd look at them for about 15 minutes and go to sleep and get the best mark in the next day in the class. Abe Kleinfeld was the best student in our class, but he worked at it day and night. He lived in a room right near, that I could see from my room on 306 Eddy Street, and I could see him sitting at his desk studying, and I would be up at my desk studying, and had comfort from that. But Paul Marvin hardly had any chance to study, but he still did very well.
How did the Depression affect students? It hit about after your second, or third year.
Depression started in 31, and I started practice in 32. And it never hurt at all because they needed a veterinarian in Hempstead in that area. There was a shortage of them at the time. And a lot of people would say to you, I remember going out with a girl one time, she said, "You're crazy to be a veterinarian. Their horses are going up. There won't be any horses in a short time." How wrong she was, it's still going. I didn't charge very much, but people always paid you. I can remember going to a dairy in East Meadow, Kate Priesmont. She was an old matriarch of a woman with a big family. And after I would get done taking the afterbirth or pulling a calf, she'd say, "Mr. Doctor, come in the house, I give you a drink." So I'd go in the house, it'd be cold weather, cold in the barn, stripped down, and she'd give me a shot of homemade potato whiskey. And then she'd say to me, "Mr. Doctor, you married one of my daughters. I got 5 strong daughters."
Dr. Waits, you had the privilege of knowing two deans, Dean Hopkins and Dean Fish, and they died when you were a student, didn't they, in 1931?
Yes, they were wonderful men. Hopkins was the anatomy professor that we had in the first year, and he lived right around the corner from me, and many a cold day we walked up from Eddy Street up through the archway into the campus and up to school, and he trudged up all the way on foot and always willing to help you at any time, day and night. If you couldn't understand something, he said, "I'll meet you up there and help you." And they were all like that, all the professors. They were always so fine. Hagen was one of the brightest men that I ever knew, always willing to help also, but very strict. And he'd have a 10-minute prelim on Saturday morning, and I remember, and boy, you better be ready. Pierre Fish was a fine, fine gentleman, very sweet and gentle. I remember him giving a lecture in the old building, it's like a room with the graduated seats up to the back. And he said, stopping his lecture, he said, "Wait, will you straighten Crandall's neck? He's going to have a stiff neck." He was sleeping in the back row. Probably worked all night somewhere. They mostly all did, you know. I washed dishes evenings at Cascadilla Hall for 3 years. Not every night, but most nights. And he'd get a dinner and 35 cents for working there, for washing the dishes. I made the most of the dinners and got my money's worth by eating plenty. fourth year, I worked as washing dishes at a sorority house up on the other side of the campus. And I can remember walking home in the middle of the evening, walking across the campus, and hearing those beautiful chimes as I was walking across the campus. It was a delight. Mm-hmm. I always remembered. I'm not musically inclined, but they had a wonderful man. He could play beautiful music on those chimes. And it was so nice coming home from working.
You knew Helen Goldaft.
Not
you
closely.
Knew her husband. Her husband was in your class.
Yes, he was in our class, and I saw her there, but I didn't know her to talk to her or anything.
What was the impression of having a woman in the class at that time?
I didn't think much about her in one way or the other, but the Horseshoer's daughter, Asma's daughter, and we were very impressed by her because she didn't have it easy. And she went on the clinics and everything with us. And she afterwards moved to Long Island and married and had a family and didn't practice at that time. And she came to see me once when I was in Hempstead just to greet me and tell me that she was there on the island, but she wasn't practicing anymore. I knew her dad pretty well. And because I was interested in horses, I was interested in horseshoeing, but I never was very good at it. That's a very difficult thing, a very skillful thing to be a fine horseshoer. Afterwards, when I took care of some race horses and fine horses around on the island, I was very aware of the blacksmith, because a blacksmith could make or break a horse. If he was good or not. Some of them would take suggestions from a veterinarian, others wouldn't. There was one that I knew named Willie Meehan that went all over with his little car and forge, and he would listen to you if you suggested a bar shoe or something like that, but some of the others wouldn't listen to you. They weren't listening to any old horse doctor. But this one, Willie Meehan, did. And I think we got a lot of horses sound by working on their hoofs and using bus shoes and so on. Oh, I loved that work, going around on calls and working on horses. Sometimes I would file the teeth on 15 or 20 horses in the stable in the morning. And that was good money. I got $5 filing the horse's teeth, and I would do the whole bunch and whatever one needed it.
Well, thank you very much. Can you just finish by saying what you liked Cornell and why did you like it?
Well, I liked Cornell. It was such a beautiful place. Professors were always so friendly and helpful. I never knew one of them that wasn't willing to help you after school or on Sunday morning if you needed it. And I also loved riding around the surrounding country and visiting all the points of interest from Syracuse to all the Finger Lakes. Most of the time I didn't have an automobile, but I had two buddies, Arthur Fredericks and Ben Fisher, who came from Northport and studying in my class. And either one of them usually had a car. And so, except for the first time that I went on the train, I never went on the train again. I always was able to get a ride with some friends. And we shared the gas expense, so it made it much cheaper that way. All my impressions of Cornell are wonderful. I love to walk down to Ithaca. We walked all the way down to the train station sometimes at night. After I'd get done studying, I'd walk down through Ithaca and back and up the hill. I'd walk up the Seneca Street Hill or Buffalo Street, the steep hill. All the time I was at Cornell, there never was very much snow. I loved to go skiing, and I had a pair of skis along. I wasn't a very good skier, but I always wanted to go skiing, and there was only one snowstorm all the while that I was at Ithaca where there was enough snow to go skiing. And I put the skis on about 9 o'clock at night, And I went down the hill in back of my house, all the way down to the center of the town anyway. And then I got the trolley car and came up again. And I was able to go a couple of times down that hill. That was the only time in 4 years that I ever got to do any skiing. But I loved the surroundings, all of Watkins Glen and all those beautiful places you could go to see. It was great. Fortunately, I had these buddies that always had an old car or so that we could go in. So it was a delightful time for me, really. And I'd recommend it to anybody.
Thank you so much. That's terrific. Thank you very much.